We're looking at the Lamentations, one of those small books in the Bible that is rarely read and carries with it a great impact theologically. The book of Lamentations is five short laments or poems of sorrow and destruction that we find attached to the end of the prophecy of Jeremiah. The reason for that is because Jeremiah is usually considered to be the author of the laments. That's not necessarily the case, but it certainly makes a lot of sense because Jeremiah lives at the times that the laments talk about, the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, and the voice that comes through in the laments is very similar to the voice of Jeremiah and the prophecies that he brings to us. Again, there are five laments. The first four of those are acrostics, meaning that the various units of the poems themselves begin with successive letters of the Hebrew alphabet, sort of like the complete story from A to Z. In the Hebrew language, 22 letters, that means that the 22 sections, and in this case with Laments 1 and 2, that there are three couplets, three double lines of Hebrew poetry. The first among those three starts with Aleph, and then the next set of three couplets or six lines begins with the letter Beit, etc., all the way through, and that's why you have the structure that you do and the number of verses that you see in the translations you're using. Lament number one was the voice of the woman Jerusalem as she was experiencing the pain of her loss. She knows that this has happened because of her own sinfulness, but she still feels it deeply, like a mother feels the loss of children, the loss of a spouse, the loss of friends, the loss of one's home and one's community. Everything is gone. She acknowledges that it happens from Yahweh, her spouse, because of her own sinfulness. But she does plead that Yahweh will follow through on other elements of the covenant promises and curses too, that include such things as judgment on the nations, including Babylon, that has brought this. Now, very interestingly, in the second lament, the voice changes because it's no longer the voice of the woman, but now much more the voice of Yahweh, or at least a representative talking for Yahweh to the woman about the woman, indicating why it is this has all taken place. Notice these words. How the Lord has covered the daughter of Zion with the cloud of his anger. He has hurled down the splendor of Israel from heaven to earth. He has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. Without the pity of the Lord, without pity, the Lord has swallowed up all the dwellings of Jacob. In his wrath, he has torn down the strongholds of the daughter of Judah. He has brought down her kingdom and its princes down to the ground in dishonor. In fierce anger, he has cut off every horn of Israel. He has withdrawn his right hand and the approach of the enemy. He has burned in Jacob like a flaming fire that consumes everything around it. Like an enemy, he has strung his bow. His right hand is ready. Like a foe, he has slain all who were pleasing to the eye. He has poured out his wrath like fire on the tent of the daughter of Zion. The Lord is like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. He has swallowed up all her palaces and destroyed her strongholds. He has multiplied mourning and lamentation for daughter Judah. He has laid waste his dwellings like a garden. He has destroyed his palace of meeting. The Lord has made Zion forget her appointed festivals and her Sabbaths. In his fierce anger, he has spurned both king and priest. The Lord has rejected his altar and abandoned his sanctuary. He has given the walls of his palaces into the hands of the enemy. They have raised a shout in the house of the Lord as on the day of the appointed festival. References there to Jerusalem being the possession of Yahweh and the home that where God meets with the Israelites, certainly, but with the nations of the earth. And notice that last line where they raise a shout in the place where the festivals took place. One of the things that the Israelites were supposed to do is come to Jerusalem and to shout, Yahweh is king. They were to shout, God's name in God's sanctuary, in God's temple, in God's palace, in God's place of residence. Now the nations have all raised their shout in that very, very place. So you have the ongoing statements about the destruction of the city, what has happened and how the people have been destroyed or have lost their place, all of the difficulties that the city itself has undergone. It's a terrible and sorrowful thing. But the end of it comes now in the last parts of the lament. Arise, cry out in the night as in the watches of the night begin. Pour out your heart like water in the presence of the Lord. Lift up your hands to him for the lives of your children who are faint from hunger at every street corner. Look, Lord, and consider whom have you ever treated like this before? Should women eat their offspring and children, the children they have cared for? Can you imagine that happening? But that happened during the last days of Jerusalem, when food was so scarce that people were actually cannibalizing their own children. Should priest and prophet be killed in the sanctuary of the Lord? Young and old together in the dust of the, lie together in the dust of the streets. Even young men and young women have fallen by the sword. You have slain them in the day of your anger. You have slaughtered them without pity. As you summoned to a feast day, so you summoned against me terrors on every side. In the day of the Lord's anger, no one escaped or survived. Those I cared for and reared, my enemy has destroyed. So you see in Lament 2 more of the perspective of heaven, not so much the voice of the woman herself, the personification of Jerusalem or Judah, but now the voice that stands with God and over all things, looking down and saying, yes, I see what's going on, but you realize there was good reason for it. The voice and perspective of heaven are announced through the second lament. And the key theme is that Yahweh has actively accosted Jerusalem to tear it down, though it's been, of course, through the actions of the Babylonians, the armies that have surrounded the city and torn down the walls and the temple. But this has happened because God's people have forgotten who they are and whose they are. And that's a very important thing. Israel had a unique relationship with the Creator. That relationship was not something that was because Israel was so powerful or great in and of herself, but because God had chosen to create a community that would bear witness to God's ways for the world, and that other nations would come by and appreciate seeing it, saying, we want that too. Israel was a very missional part of the overall divine plan with planet Earth. And when Israel failed to do that, well, when Israel did that, it looked like the times of Solomon. But when Israel failed to do that, Israel was also under the curses of the covenant that said, if you fail in these things, you will run before your enemies and you will have famine in the land and diseases and pestilence will come. All of these things have happened because the Israelites failed to participate fully or continually in the things that God had intended for them. The reason for Yahweh's judgment is the woman's own sinfulness. So Yahweh is justified in these actions that have resulted in torture and pain and loneliness and helplessness for her. These things are all part of the larger picture of the curses of the Sinai covenant coming to pass. The Sinai covenant had six parts to it. It had a preamble in which Yahweh had declared his right of ownership or relationship with Israel. It had a historical prologue in which the leaving of Egypt and the great deliverance from Egypt was announced. This is how it all has happened. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And then it had the stipulations. This is how you will operate, and this is how I will operate with you. We're in partnership together. Then it had the list of witnesses. In this case, it was the elders of the people who looked on. It had the curses and blessings, what would happen if Israel did the right thing, what would happen if Israel did the wrong thing. And then it had the document clauses or the confirmation clauses. So all of that is there together, and part of the covenant itself is the curses and the blessings. The blessings have been so much a part of Israel's history. Now, in this moment, the curses have kicked in because Israel failed to follow through on its unique relationship with Yahweh and lost its voice as a witness for Yahweh to the world and lost its own place as a uniquely blessed entity. Nevertheless, coming through both Laments 1 and 2 is this ongoing understanding that somehow God is still in control. God is going to resolve these things. God is going to make the right things happen. They may not happen right now, but it will happen very soon. We'll take a look next time at Lament number 3.